thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
This will be fun.
Here's John Williams.
I got a question for you. Kim, if it doesn't come to mind, if it's not a gut reaction, if you just don't go boom, oh yeah, I know one, then don't worry about it. But I've got a question for you, because I've been still thinking about that episode of Game of Thrones. We've watched it twice in my house now from Sunday night. And if you're not a Game of Thrones fan, that's okay. You don't have to be to play along with
this.
Okay, but that's all right. But I think those of us who are fans of the show and saw that thought, at least I did, that was one of the best episodes of television I ever saw. I'm asking people to tell me, what are your best episode of a TV show you watched that you can recall that you've ever loved, loved, loved? What was the best episode of TV you ever saw?
The thing that pops into my mind, weirdly enough, is the last episode of MASH.
How is that not on everybody's list?
It's got to be.
It's got to be. That's
awesome.
That pops
into my head immediately.
Especially for final episodes, which can be very, you know, iffy as well. They hit that one out of the park, didn't they?
Yeah, that was fantastic.
In fact, you could do a whole list of just last episodes of TV shows.
Right, but I'm
just
Seinfeld. Saying,
absolutely. Or, yeah. Well, Seinfeld was a fail for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people didn't like it. Cheers pops into my head, the last episode.
Mary Tyler Moore Show, when they did the group hug and they all squished over to this the Kleenex. So I've got my list, and I'll just share with you 9, 8, and 7, and then we'll play clips from and ask you for some of yours later on. Gilligan's Island, the honeybees episode. Twilight Zone, the monster on the wing of the airplane.
Never watched Twilight Zone.
Ozymandias from Breaking Bad. It's just one of the famous episodes from Breaking Bad. I won't describe it to you, but the point is...
Every episode in Breaking Bad was great.
Mean. It's like,
I mean, come on.
You know, I was researching the list with David, and we go, oh, yeah, we remember that one. That was a great one. But if you'd said, oh, the most famous one is this other one, I would have said, oh, yeah, that was a great one, too. But I'll put Ozymandias, which appears on a lot of people's lists, as one of the greatest episodes of television of all time, at number 7 on my list. I'll ask you for yours in just a little bit. Before we do any of that, I want to talk about what's happening with North Korea. On Fox and Friends, they had a story saying that the North Koreans are loading onto their ships canisters capable of firing anti-ship cruise missiles so their Navy could hit our Navy in the open seas, say, or somebody else's. How do we know that? Because spy satellites pick these things up. How Fox and Friends knows that, I don't know. They use the same sort of sources the president is not happy with these days, and that is unnamed sources. Still, Fox and Friends had it. And then the president, who shouldn't have to get this information from Fox and Friends, what with him being the president and all, retweeted the story. The ambassador for the United States to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, said, if that happened, that is terribly dangerous and unfortunate for the United States. That information should not be leaked, even if it's by the president of the United States. Now, maybe having seen it on Fox and Friends, the president decided that it's okay to share. But you know how whenever there's an act of terrorism, Donald Trump immediately tweets there was an act of terrorism in London or something like that? It's sort of like he wants to be the kid in the class with his hand waving back and forth going, ooh, ooh, pick me. He wants to be the first to tell you. That's what it feels like on some of these things, that he's either privy to information at the highest level or that he's just paying attention and wants to shout it out first or foremost. He can't seem to resist passing along sometimes information we all would have gotten anyway. But in this case, maybe we should not have gotten it at all. So it's a little ironic that the guy who has praised Jeff Sessions this week for cracking down on leakers, we're going to get him and we're going to be tough, has in fact leaked information that his own ambassador says we should not have revealed. Now that is all a little bit beside the point. Maybe the more important issue here is, what's going on? How dangerous is this revelation? And what should we do next? So we reached out again to our friends over at the Chicago, let me make sure I get the right title for this, the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. The expert on North Korea there is Carl Friedhoff, who's joined us before. And Carl is on line 8. Hey, Carl, it's John Williams. Welcome back to our show. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Pretty good. That's my overall assessment of what's happened today. Do you concur with that? Would you add to that in some way?
Well, I think, you know, this the story about the ship, they're loading missiles onto the ship. I think we need to put that into context a little bit. That's a bit of a smaller story than the larger story of what's happening with these continued missile launches and the potential for a sixth nuclear test. So while that's kind of a small bit and perhaps is going to suggest that these larger tests are going to continue. And that's really where we need to focus. Yeah, it's not great when our president is doing something that he has criticized others for. But I'm not really sure how that really changes the calculus of the overall situation. The United Nations Security Council over the weekend passed a resolution that is going to impose tougher sanctions on North Korea. But again, we're going to have to wait and see of how effective those sanctions actually are.
Talk to me about those sanctions, $1 billion and hitting them in some industries that they've been able to make money on. Plus, as I understand it, there's a lot of North Koreans outside of North Korea who earn money and send it back into the country. $1 billion goes that way, and we're going to make it more difficult for that to happen, too.
Yeah, the overseas labor has been something that is ongoing. Some of my former colleagues did a big study on this several years ago. There are North Korean laborers that work in Russia, they work in China, they work in places like the Middle East and Africa, and all of that money basically is funneled directly back to the regime. Of course, the workers that are sent abroad are generally judged by the North Korean regime to be loyal, and therefore perhaps their loyalty is seen as unshakable. And so that's why they are able to go on some of these expeditions to work overseas. The sanctions themselves, they aim at coal, they aim at iron ore, they aim at lead, and it's all trying to make sure that North Korea cannot continue to make money from some of this trade, which can then be funneled back into its arms program. Of course, the question then arises of, well, if this is what's going on, we're trying to limit this money, how do we know it's going to the arms program, and how do we know it's not hurting the people, the common people of North Korea, you know, hurting their livelihoods,
right,
causing even more suffering?
Well,
the counterpoint to that,
sure,
is, you know, in the 90s, it was not the U.S. sanctions or international sanctions that led North Korea to have a famine. North Korea has chosen on its own to pursue its nuclear weapons program. And quite frankly, I think that's something we have to understand, is that North Korea has no trouble in harming its own.
Yeah, well, that's what we're told, that they'll have to make a tough decision. Will they continue to fund their military, or are they going to fund their people? And you're here to tell us, we think we already know the answer to that. But
I think they'll absolutely continue to fund their military, because they've shown time and time again that they have no regard for their own citizens. And I think as U.S. citizens and citizens in Europe or other places, you know, that's very hard for us to actually accept. But I think that's the reality.
Well, what option do we have? I mean, if nothing else, that foments a little rebellion, but you don't want to continue to participate in their economy. You're shy of military, you know, sort of intervention. This seems to make sense to me.
Yeah, the sanctions are, for now, I think they are the way to go. Again, we don't want to condone this kind of program, and we're trying to ward off others by showing them that there can be consequences. Now, so far, the consequences for North Korea have been relatively light. The idea that North Korea is the most sanctioned country in the world has been a myth for a long time. You know, the sanctions, if you compare those that we have on North Korea to what we had on Iran in the past, are much lighter. And it's really only now that the international community, including the United States, is really getting serious about putting these sanctions on North Korea and trying to make them work. Of course, the wild card is China. China has said that it's willing to pay the price for tougher sanctions on North Korea, but what they're actually going to do remains unclear. They may try to go around those sanctions, and in some ways, this looks like a win for China.
Let me ask you this. You said that the North Korean citizens are sent abroad, South Korea, China, Japan, Asia, wherever. They make money, they send it back into North Korea, and you said that money goes to the regime. Not as taxes, but they send the bulk of what they earn back to the government? Or sort of, I don't know, indentured servants going out into the globe and bringing money back in?
Essentially, that's the way it works. The workers, as far as I understand it, this is not my area of expertise, but having worked with the people who did a lot of research on this and have talked about it a lot, that essentially the workers don't have to remit anything, and they basically never see any of the pay anyway. So it's not like they get a paycheck and then they're required to then go to a bank and send a remittance back. The remittance is basically made government to government, and then those workers are then sent out. So there
Seriously?
Is no middleman, and that takes
That's even worse.
Out of the hands of the workers to control their money.
And what if, is this a possible scenario? So they've got some sort of, they have their Navy. It's out on the water. Our Navy's out there. They fire a shot at us. Maybe one of their missiles hits one of our boats. I wonder what would happen then. Where do you think that goes?
That is a very scary scenario to imagine, especially with the level of tension where it is right now. My general inclination is to say that something like that is not going to happen. One of the things we learn from North Korea, if you watch them over decades, how they've handled their situation, they are very good at knowing where the line is and not stepping over it. So I would expect that there may be low-level provocations, but I think they clearly know that any kind of provocation like that that's aimed at a U.S. ship would be way beyond the pale and would invite a response. Now, perhaps now they feel they're in a position to toe that line and perhaps try to step beyond it. And I don't want to get into hypotheticals, but I think all of the most recent calculations about what a conflict and potential escalation would look like in East Asia, they're all very, very bad.
Well, I think that's why Joe is calling in. Hey, Joe, you're on WGN. What was your question?
I'm more of a comment. I think this deal with North Korea is a case of do as I say, not as I do. And that's never a good policy. It just upsets people. We're telling them they can't have a weapon that we have. What happened to mutual assured destruction? It's worked with other countries, other nuclear countries for years. The fact they know that if they use a nuclear weapon against us, they'll be wiped off the face of the earth. So no one uses them. Why can't that work with North Korea?
Yeah, is that what's going on here, maybe, Carl?
Well, it can work with North Korea, and I think there's a good argument out there that it is working with North Korea. You know, North Korea hasn't used their weapons. No one has used their weapons, and North Korea understands that there are certain types of provocations and kinetic actions that will invite an overwhelming response from the United States. However, you know, that only involves using weapons, and, you know, as I've often said, that the power for North Korea is in having the weapons, perhaps not in using them. It's trying to assure that its own national security, rather. And the way it does that is to ensure that it has the ability to strike the United States. You know, I think one of the things that we don't quite appreciate and we need to understand more is the North Korean perspective on the problem at hand. It legitimately, well, you can disagree with its view, but its view is that the United States is a hostile country and that it intends to inflict harm on North Korea when it can. So for it to develop nuclear weapons in some ways makes a lot of sense, but that's not necessarily in using them. That's to ensure that it has them and that if there is any kind of an attack on North Korea, it will have the ability to respond. Now, that fits into the larger goals of North Korea by trying to split the United States and South Korean alliance. By developing these nuclear weapons, if it were to, say, attack South Korea in a more broad way, then it has created doubt that the United States will respond because now the U.S. is in fear of a nuclear retaliation.
Yeah, we don't want
to
get
into that. There is some of that going on, but mutually assured destruction for now seems to be holding.
It's nice to talk to you, Carl, North Korean expert over at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. I suspect I'll call you again. I appreciate your help this afternoon.
All right, thank you.
That's Carl Friedhoff. It's 122. This is WGN. We sent David, who's been shadowing the show, with a cell phone over to a nearby Walgreens to buy some sweetened beverages. Did you see there's a class action lawsuit against Walgreens because they've been charging the sweet soda tax on items that should not be charged? You know how we've all been confused about what should or should not be taxed? Evidently, Walgreens is a little confused, too. And so evidently, they're not doing it correctly all the time. So you knew this was going to happen. Some guy in Western Springs goes, well, I'll teach them. I'll sue them. We'll get a class action suit against Walgreens. I'm not sure Walgreens is the bad guy here, but if they're doing it wrong, they should fix that. But I'm not sure that Walgreens is the person to take it out on, even though they've probably got pretty deep pockets. But are you mad at Walgreens? Like, are you cheering this guy on? All right, David's over there. We'll visit with him in a little bit. Also, those TV shows, best episodes of television you ever saw. I'll weave a couple of your calls in next on WGN. Steve, tell me if this sounds about right. All-time greatest TV episodes of all time, 9, Gilligan's Island, Honeybees. Number 8, Twilight Zone, Monster on the Wing of the Plane. Number 7, Breaking Bad, episode called Ozymandias. Number 6, Bonanza, A Matter of Circumstance, where Little Joe was going to cut his arm off because he got kicked by a horse. He had an infection. Nobody was around to save him. He was all by himself. He got the hatchet out, had it under the fire, and he was going to chop off his arm. Maybe you don't remember that episode. I sure do.
I do not.
Dick Van Dyke Show, the Walnuts episode, where Laura's maybe an alien from another planet.
Okay, that sounds familiar.
This is my list. Evidently, it's not
yours.
Yeah,
it's got. I don't think Gilligan's Island's on a lot of people's lists.
Nixon versus Kennedy, the Mad Men. Mad Men episode, Nixon versus Kennedy.
Okay, I didn't see it.
Yeah. You do have television, right?
I do, yeah.
Mary Tyler Moore show, Chuckles Bites the Dust.
Definitely way up there high.
Yeah. Game of Thrones the other night, Spoils of War. And then for me,
why
one.
Why was that so good, that episode? I just watched it last night.
You didn't think it was awesome?
I thought it was great. But I mean, I don't know why. Because I did read that. People saying one of the best shows ever. And
I would say that's a good question if you asked me to break it down. But clearly the second half, I mean, that war scene, that battle scene with the dragons and all that, you didn't think that was amazing television? The spectacle of it all? It was violent and horrible. People had their eyes burned out, but
right.
I'm not worried about that.
No, I guess not.
John, the last episode of Saint Elsewhere. Yep. Boy, hard to argue with that.
I was thinking of that one. And then you would have to put maybe the last episode, well, it's just because of the trick of it, of the second Newhart series.
The next texture is Waking from the Dream, Newhart, Mike in Rogers Park. Thank you, Mike. Breaking Bad, the Faces Off episode where the very old wheelchair-bound Mexican cartel leader kills the black U.S. meth cartel leader. Yeah. Taxi episode where Reverend Jim takes his driver's license test.
bills.
Seriously, you're there for that? And not Gilligan's Island, the honeybees episode?
Can I throw a really weird twist?
Sure.
How about September 11th, 2001, the NBC Today show?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't scripted, obviously. It was very different, but I think they would for years replay that couple of hours.
As it unfolded right before their eyes.
Yeah.
I remember Peter Jennings, when his reporter in the field was describing to him what happened, and he said, the buildings come down, and Jennings says, no, the building didn't. Jennings could not process that. He refused to believe, and the guy says, no, the building has collapsed, and Jennings could not put that in a box that he could relate with confidence.
Right, couldn't see it.
He was like trying to correct the guy, knowing maybe the top fell off, or the windows are popping out, but the guy goes, no, the building's collapsed. And Jennings, like the rest of us, was so incredulous, he almost refused to admit it. It's 1:31. Steve, you're going to do the news in a second. Are you doing the class action lawsuit in this newscast?
You're going to give it a mention.
Well, so David's been shadowing the show, and we sent him over to a nearby Walgreens. David, where are you?
Hey, John. Yes, I'm just in the soda section in the back aisle of Walgreens here.
Okay, so it says here Walgreens sued over allegedly collecting soda pop tax on unsweetened drinks. So you need to find some unsweetened drinks, David.
Yes, I'm actually by the LaCroix section now, which is the beverage in question for this suit.
Well, and it's not, but it's not just LaCroix. But go ahead, tell me what you see.
Yeah, so there's the sweetened beverage tags that say Cook County sweetened beverage tags is now reflected in all qualifying sweetened beverages.
Wait, hold on. You're reading that from something?
Yes, I'm reading this on a tag. When you go buy soda, there's just little tags on right by each soda and coffee and stuff like that say Cook County sweetened beverage tax is now reflected in all qualifying sweetened beverages.
Okay.
And you'll see that below each item of that's sweet and sugary, like soda and coffee.
Okay, well,
and
so
they have that below LaCroix and sparkling water as well.
And wait, does that indicate that they are taxing LaCroix water?
Now, to my knowledge, that's the question. To my knowledge,
they're not.
It should not be yet.
But the question is, are they? Here's what it says in the article, David. The lawsuit says a Walgreens store in Western Springs, not where you are, charged the tax on a case of Dasani Black Cherry sparkling water. So I want you to look for some Dasani waters and see if the tax is there, and on Lipton Pure Leaf Unsweetened Green Tea. You got that?
All right.
You know, you've been talking about this sweetened beverage tax. We sent David out to just make a purchase at Walgreens because there is this class action suit against the city, which I still think is, or against Walgreens rather. And I'm still not sure that Walgreens is the bad guy here. You know, if as they roll it out, they get a few things wrong, I don't want to jump on the bandwagon and say, all right, Walgreens, we're taking you down. We sent David over to the Walgreens nearby to see what was going on there. And, David, what did you find on the Dasani sweetened beverage that this one guy was all upset about?
Yeah, John. To my knowledge, I wasn't taxed the soda tax on that particular black cherry beverage.
You bought it?
I got yes. I just bought it. I was the original sale price was $3.99, and then the sales tax was 9 cents. So I got the total was $4.08.
Yeah. Well, how many ounces in that? Because it's supposed to be a penny an ounce.
Sure.
All right, well, bring it over. You're across the street at the Walgreens. Bring the receipt, bring the beverage over, and we'll...
You're not going to drink that, are you?
Yep, all the way. I'm going to need quite a few.
Even if the bottle is empty, David, that'll be all right. Okay, I'll see you in a bit. Okay. Come on back, all right?
Yep.
Speaking of the city of Chicago, in our studio is Ed Siskel, the City of Chicago Corporation Counsel and the head of the Chicago Law Department. Welcome, and thanks for coming into our studio. Ed, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, John.
You don't want to comment on that, do you? I guess that's not your purview, is it? That's a county tax.
It's a Cook County tax, so the city of Chicago is not involved in that.
We've
got plenty of other class action lawsuits to deal with.
Aren't you glad you don't have to sort that thing out? Oh, my God. What a tangle that is. Actually, we asked you to come over and just comment for us a little bit on the sanctuary status for Chicago and the lawsuit that's taking place. Can you describe that a little for us?
Sure, John. So yesterday morning, the city of Chicago filed a lawsuit here in federal court in the Northern District of Illinois in Chicago against Attorney General Jeff Sessions. And we filed the lawsuit because of new restrictions that the Trump Justice Department has imposed on cities and counties that receive a public safety grant funds from a program called the Edward Byrne Justice Assistance Grant. This is an annual grant that we've been applying for and receiving vital public safety funds under for years now.
Of a few million dollars.
Yes. Last year it was about $2.3 million. Yeah. We would anticipate it would be something similar, this year.
So that's their lever. If you don't participate in cooperating with ICE officials or other federal immigration officials, then we'll withhold this funding for cities.
Yes, but, we're also going in with eyes wide open that this is a test case, and that while the Justice Department and the Trump administration may be focusing right now on just this one grant, that they've made pretty clear their intention to apply this across a whole range of federal funds. If you look back to the very beginning of the Trump administration, feels like a long time ago, but it was just a few months ago, they introduced an executive order within the first week or two that the Trump administration was in office that was designed to eliminate all federal funding to so-called sanctuary cities. So while this is about one particular grant, we have no illusions that it's going to stop there.
Yeah, when I first heard what the measure was, I thought, wow, that's not what I thought. I thought it was going to be much more draconian. And who knows, maybe it could be. Different cities define sanctuary status differently. What does it mean in Chicago?
Well, we use the term welcoming city. We have a welcoming city ordinance. And you're right that there are different models all across the country. And so to talk about and to implement restrictions that are designed to deal with so-called sanctuary cities is problematic in and of itself, because it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. So, for example, in Chicago, we don't collect immigration status related information in the first place. A long time ago, back in the Harold Washington administration, the city and the city council made a determination that we wanted cops to focus on protecting citizens and residents of Chicago and to focus on fighting crime, not gathering immigration status related information.
So if you pull somebody over for speeding or drunk driving or whatever, you're not going to ask them if they're here legally?
Our police do not gather information about people's immigration status.
There are
situations where they might come across that information. And we have policies and procedures for dealing with that. But as a practice, we don't gather that information, and for good reason. You want the community to feel safe, comfortable coming to the police. This is part of our fundamental community policing strategy, that rather than having folks in the shadows. You want them to come forward to report criminal activity, to be willing to serve as witnesses in a criminal case or prosecution, and to take take advantage of vital city services, whether it's our community colleges, healthcare related services, rather than feeling like in fear of the police.
What does the administration want you to do?
Well, they want three things, and they've announced just last Thursday three conditions on receipt of these public safety grant funds. First, they are mandating that cities like Chicago provide ICE agents unlimited access to police lockup facilities or detention facilities to go in and interrogate individuals about their immigration status. And to be clear, this is not limited to where they have particular information that somebody is here unlawfully. They want that access to interview and interrogate people to find out. Second, they are requiring cities like Chicago to provide 48 hours advance notice before someone is released from custody to ICE agents so that they can potentially pick them up on immigration.
But are we talking about, all right, so suppose I'm speeding or doing something that caused me to be arrested and I'm going to spend the night in a county jail, a city jail?
So that's an important issue here because the city of Chicago doesn't run a jail. We have lockup facilities at many of our police stations where we might process someone after an arrest, determine whether there is sufficient probable cause to charge them, and then have them transferred over to Cook County and presented to a judge to be charged with a crime, and for a judge to make the determination, should they be released on bond, should they be released on their own recognizance. That 48-hour requirement that we give 48 hours advance notice is going to put us in a position where we have to hold somebody for longer than otherwise necessary solely for the basis of
otherwise giving necessary or otherwise lawful. I mean,
exactly.
Can you do that just out of convenience for the federals?
We think that there's quite a bit of case law out there that would suggest that that is a violation of Fourth Amendment rights.
I don't know how it's not, but isn't the problem with this, though? And this is, people listening to you maybe are tracking, going, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, then do what you're doing. But doesn't it frustrate you, the notion that that guy you pulled over for speeding or for whatever offense, he's now at Cook County, and he's not a violent criminal. We don't have a rap sheet a mile long on this guy, but he's not here legally. So shouldn't we cooperate with the federal government to see that he's, I don't know, removed or whatever happens to people who aren't here legally? We ought to allow that process to go forward, particularly if that person is not here legally, they do commit a crime. They do something. We go, damn, we had him in our hands. He was at Cook County and we let him go. Why? Because Chicago won't cooperate. Isn't that on you guys?
Well, no,
that's the way that goes.
No, John, because, you know, the federal immigration authorities have a job to do. This and the city of Chicago, actually, under our welcoming city ordinance, has provisions so that if there is a criminal warrant out for someone, if there has been a judicial determination that there is probable cause that somebody has committed a serious offense, that we will cooperate with such a criminal detainer and turn them over under those circumstances. What this is about is whether you are going to violate somebody's Fourth Amendment rights on the mere suspicion that they might be here unlawfully and hold them longer than necessary simply so that ICE can come in and make that determination.
Well, here's the other problem with this. How the hell are they going to do that? How many ICE agents do we have? Think of all of the people that go through big city jails. They're going to interview all of them? How are they even going to determine that?
And there's been no plan that we've seen for ICE to
Doesn't that
to
sound onerous to you?
I would think that would require a huge, huge amount of resources. And we've seen no such commitment of resources. And the downside is that it is breeding a culture and an environment of fear in the community where people feel reluctant to come forward and report criminal activity.
Yeah, yeah.
And we want, as part of the mayor and Superintendent Eddie Johnson's community policing strategy, for people to see the cops as part of their community, as someone that they can turn to, rather than somebody who's there to turn them over for deportation.
The head of the Chicago Law Department, Ed Siskel, is in our studio. I know you've got a couple of questions. In our studio right now, City of Chicago Corporation Counsel, the head of the Chicago Law Department, Ed Siskel, is here. So you are suing Jeff Sessions, the Department of Justice, right?
That's correct.
Cities do that. It's not Jeff Sessions personally. The city is suing the federal government, essentially.
That's correct. And we're asking a federal court to declare that the new restrictions that the Trump administration has announced on these public safety funds is unlawful and unconstitutional.
It sounds a little tit for tattish. Is there case law on this? How does history record these sorts of things?
Well, you know, already when the Justice Department and the Trump administration tried to defend the executive order that would have potentially removed all federal funding from so-called sanctuary cities, a judge out in California, when San Francisco and Santa Clara County sued, that was enjoined. A judge basically said that executive order could not be enforced. This is sort of the next step, where the Justice Department has now moved to tying what we see as vital public safety grant funds to these conditions. And our lawsuit is premised on the notion that we shouldn't be forced to choose between public safety dollars that are so important to the crime fight and agreeing to these conditions that are directly inconsistent with the Constitution and our welcoming city ordinance.
Well, the president and the attorney general say it's too bad Chicago is choosing to play politics and not safeguard its people. Rather than take the money from the federal government to give your officers vests and body cams and life-saving equipment for them and for us, you guys are going against the federal grain and being this welcoming city and not helping them round up illegal aliens.
This is not about politics, John. This is about standing up for our values as a welcoming city and for what we see as a threat to our police-community relations that is so essential to protecting public safety and the crime fight. When you create an atmosphere where people fear when they report criminal activity, when they cooperate with law enforcement and serve as witnesses in criminal cases, that it is going to risk their friends, their family, their loved ones, their neighbors being swept up in an immigration-related dragnet, that is going to undermine public safety and make our community less secure.
Is there a link between illegal aliens in the city and our spike in crime?
Well, the Attorney General and the Trump administration has said that a number of times. They've been asked repeatedly to provide any kind of factual support, any data to back that up, and they haven't been able to do that. It's been all rhetoric about the link. Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson, who has been policing the streets of Chicago for 30 years, has made very clear that there is no link between illegal immigration and the increased crime rate. And studies nationwide show, actually, that sanctuary cities as a whole have lower crime rates, for precisely the reasons that I've pointed to, that it encourages people to be willing to come forward and cooperate with law enforcement. So the facts just don't support the Justice Department's position here.
Larry, you're on WGN. What was your question?
Yes, I would like to know why Chicago and all these cities that are sanctuary cities want illegal immigrants in this country when they can't even take care of the poor people that are living in the cities as it is. They would have so much more money to solve the crimes and to take care of people that are here illegally.
I got it, Larry. It's beeping 2 o'clock, but I want him to respond to that. Go ahead.
Well, you know, at a time when the city is focused on reducing crime, the crime fight, it is essential that these kinds of federal grant programs that have provided essential funds for police cars and radios and computers and SWAT team equipment, that we don't lose funds like that, and that they shouldn't be held up from helping with the crime fight over what is essentially a political ploy. And here, where this is about encouraging cooperation between all residents of Chicago and police for community policing strategies, it is fundamentally undermining public safety to tie those essential grant dollars to requiring us to be commandeered to do what is essentially a federal immigration job.
The Corporation Counsel for the City of Chicago is Ed Siskel. Ed, thanks for coming into our studio today.
Thanks for having me, John.
We're going to follow this. I'd love it if you could come into our studio again. I sure appreciate your time.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
There we go.
Here's John Williams.
I got a quiz for you. This will help you determine if, in fact, you qualify to be a United States citizen.
Lord have mercy.
Thanks to the Corporate Counsel for the City of Chicago for coming into our studio. Ed Siskel did a nice job. I know a lot of you didn't agree with his position. That's the city's position. Obviously, the federal government feels differently. So there's one side of the story. We heard the other side the other day. And a lot of you, I think, will take issue with the city's position on it. At the end of the day, you say, wait a minute. These people are here illegally. Why are we letting them be here illegally? We should be rounding them up and getting rid of them. And even if we shouldn't be doing that, if for some reason they've come under the auspices of the law, even if it's for running a stop sign and the officer pulls them over, why can't we then see if they're here illegally? And the answer is because we, in this case, the city of Chicago, it's not our job. That's not what the city police are assigned to do. It's not what the county is assigned to do. They don't all have all powers. And I don't know that this resonates as much as it should, but boy, you talk to mayors in border towns in Texas, like, say, El Paso, and they will tell you this is important. If you want to get the minority community to cooperate with law, and you do, rounding up people who you suspect being here illegally or are here illegally and summarily dismissing them will keep that entire community from working with law enforcement officials. That's what he said. That's effective community policing. And it's complicated, isn't it? But that's the city's position on this. And I sure appreciate Ed Siskel's coming in at least explaining that to us. So there's the other story, though, and this is from Time Magazine. Elif, I guess we should put this on our Facebook page and let you take the quiz yourself. Time Magazine today posted this. President Trump has announced his support last week for a new merit-based immigration bill that would screen visa applicants using a point system. You know, this is the RAISE Act that Senator Cotton is behind, where you weigh each person's age, education, English ability, jobs, salary, investments. You know, do we want to let them into this country or not? If they're going to be good citizens and participate in the economy and help us be even greater again, then yeah, bring them in. But if it's people that are just going to pull us down or break the laws or use up all of our services, then if you're going to prioritize, you want the first group, not the second. So they're going to have all of these points. And the question that Time Magazine is posing is, okay, based on this new merit system, would you qualify? So it's like six simple questions. If you score 30 points, you're in. If you don't, you're out. Steve, what's your age? Are you over 50? Are you 46?
Yeah.
Okay, then 0 points for you, my friend. The best age would be between 26 and 30. 31 to 35, 8 points. 36 to 46 points. 41 to 45, 4. It goes all the way down. If you're over 50, you get 0 points. They don't want you. Or at least you would get no points if you're over 50. I guess I'm not exactly sure why. Maybe your earning potential is that much less. You're going to be relying on our services more if you're over the age of 50, so that you get no points over 50. What's your highest level of education? For me, it's a bachelor's degree. I get 6 points for that. If you have a high school diploma, you get 1 point. Bachelor's degree, 6 points. I don't see a junior college degree on here. You think that would be worth some points, but it doesn't show up. If you have a U.S. professional degree or doctorate in science, technology, engineering, or math, if you have an advanced STEM degree, 13 points. And remember, you only need 30. So I'm zero because I'm over 50. and I pick up, let's see here, 6 points with my bachelor's degree from Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. Boy, if they know it's from SIUC, I'll bet they'll subtract a couple points. Okay, what's your English ability? Poor, moderate, good, excellent, fluent? I went with excellent. I suppose I should put fluent, which is even better than excellent on this list.
Gooder than most?
I would think that fluent, I think it would go poor, moderate, good, then you're fluent, but then you're excellent. You're fluent and then some. Anyway, I put excellent. I pick up 11 points. I'm now at 17 and on my way to making it into the United States of America.
What happens if you're a lifelong unpaid volunteer who has helped wean babies from cocaine addiction?
Not on the list.
You can't commit into the country?
Do you have a job offer? No, 0 points. Yes, with a salary less than $77,900, 0 points. Wow, that's tough. If you have a job, you're coming in and go, yeah, but I'll earn $75,000 when I get to your country. That's how much I'm wanted. That's not enough to score any additional points. If you're going to make more than $155,000, then you get 13 points. And then it's a graduated scale. On this thing, I'm going to pick up about 5 or 6 points, whatever. So let's put me down for, now I'm at 22. Do you have a Nobel Prize or major international award? I'm not making this up. It's a yes or no. Steve, we'll start with you.
No.
Well, now hold on. Nobel Prize?
No.
Major international award?
No.
Do you have a major award? And did you win a leg lamp?
No.
Okay. So you get 0 points. We don't want you as much. If you do, though, and by the way, Steve, maybe just run out and get one. I don't think these are all that hard to get, or international awards for crying out loud. You get 25 points. You only need 30 to come into the country. So if you have 25 points, heck, all you got to do is be over the age of 22 and you're in. We do want the award winners. Okay, 0 points. Have you won an Olympic medal in the last 8 years?
Are you kidding me?
That is on the list. And if you have, pick up 15 points, which would make you even more valuable to us than somebody with an advanced STEM degree. If you have an advanced STEM degree, you get 13 points. But if you have a bronze medal in badminton from 8 years ago, you pick up 15 points. That's even better.
How about if it's awarded to you later after others are disqualified for illegal drug use?
Can't help you with that, Steve. Do you plan on investing money in the United States? Well, now this is a slam dunk. No, 0 points. Do not put no. Say yes.
This could be a cottage business. You could like advise applicants.
That's totally what I'm going to do. I'm going to be John Williams.
Yes to number 13.
Immigration counsel. I'll go, Pedro, how much you with the donkey? Come here. Are you going to invest in the United States? He say, no, sir, I do not have any money. I go, Pedro. Are you in good, wink, wink, I'm giving him that thing. You're going to invest money, right? Oh, yes, sí, señor. I say, okay, how much? Oh, I don't know. I don't have but two pesos to rub together, sir. And then I'll say, Pedro, $1.35 million for a new commercial enterprise? Huh? Donkey stalls? Air conditioning? Sí, señor. If with foreign currency worth less than $1.35 million you're going to invest in the United States, 0 points. But if you're over $1.35 million, well, hello. Now you pick up 6 points. And if you're over $1.8 million, 12 points. Remember now, Olympic medal, 15 points. Invest over $1.8 million, 12 points. We love us some Olympic medals here. I don't know what we're going to do with them when we get you here with them, but that's how you become an immigrant with, you know, advanced status coming into the United States.
So it's all about how much money you can bring or make,
or prestige.
Right? It's not about you. You used the phrase a contributing citizen or contribute to the economy.
Yeah.
Your value of a citizen is marked there, measured there, only by how much you can contribute to the economy. If you're weaning kids from coca leaves unpaid, you're not wanted here. Right? That's the measure there.
You're not wanted as much as somebody with a Nobel Prize or an Olympic medal or
a job.
A job. Right. Well, yeah, because by the way, those drug counselors, we're not going to pay them any money.
You want to come in here and volunteer in the inner cities? We don't need you.
Well, it doesn't pay well. But if you're going to make at least, if you're going to make over $104,000, you pick up 8 points. Again, badminton bronze medal, 12 points. No, 15 points. But if you're going to earn $104,000, 8 points, so not as much. There's a little logic to this, but then it fails in the details. But I just don't get the Olympic medal thing. Maybe you could parlay that into a career. I mean, if you're an Olympic medalist, you're famous, and you do obviously have some extraordinary skills. But
maybe they're thinking you'll melt it down and contribute it to the economy.
I
invest in the U.S.
We'll send you to Fort Knox.
I won first place in a piano contest once. That's
Really, if we're going to do that, I mean, think about that. A person who's a gold medalist in the Olympics in skating or something. That's the top. So that should be worth something, 15 points. But then maybe you're right. Say you were a high school state champion. We'll give you 7 points. And what did you win? A piano competition?
Yeah, first place.
What year? Or what grade, rather?
Fifth grade.
How many people were in the competition?
15.
I'll get right back to you. Steve, was a first place winner among 15 fifth graders.
Was it first place or third place?
Stand by, hold on.
First place.
First place.
By the way, this is called grade inflation. If you got like an honorable mention, I would just say first place. You know, it felt like first place.
I did get a trophy, though.
She's got a trophy, Steve. If you present the trophy to immigration officials, Steve, how many points are we going to give Elif?
Well, if she can present the trophy, she'll get a point. If she can't, I think we might take two for telling an unlikely story.
We don't want liars.
No.
Oh, wait.
Hey, I'll bring it into the studio.
We already got them.
What's that, Elif?
I'll bring it to the studio. I want you to bring
your trophy here.
Actually, Elif, if you still have your trophy,
I'm going to subtract.
You lose 4 more points.
Well, as a recent immigrant to this city from Minneapolis, I can tell you that Brenda and I were transporting boxes of things, and some of them included trophies of mine.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, my best friend was an immigrant from Colombia, and he would not make it in the country under those standards. He's an executive now.
Really?
A couple of college graduates or one near to be a graduate, and very successful, would not be wanted.
I took this test. They say 30 is the... what you want to get, and I think I got I did not get enough points. I think I was at 28. I think I was at 28 points. What with me not being a Nobel Prize winner and all, it's kind of tough to crack.
What do you think would be more likely, your Olympic medal or a Nobel Prize? Really, it's imponderable.
I know, a zillion miles or a trillion miles. I don't think it really matters. Jay wanted to say something. You're on WGN. Hello, Jay.
Hi, John.
Hi.
I was just listening to your math here, and you got points for an international award, right?
Yeah, you do.
And you get points for an Olympic medal,
right,
which is an international award. So you get double points.
It's like a double dip.
Anybody who wins anything in the Olympics is automatically
in with 10 points to spare.
Give that guy another point for figuring that out.
You know what? When I become King Jay, you're in charge, man. If you've got some illegals over there, we're going to let them in because you just figured it out. You cracked the code.
I got it.
All right. Thanks for the call. Now, bye now. I still want the guy from A Christmas Story to come in with the leg lamp and say, it's a major award. Anybody in the world could have won this. This would be international if I was in Colombia and I won it. So how about I get into the country? Not so much. It's 2:21 on WGN. Speaking of major awards, did you see that the number one most viewed video on Earth, we have a new number one? It was Gangnam Style, and then that got knocked off about a month ago, and now the one that was the new number one is now number two, and Gangnam Style is now number three. So we'll count them down. Okay, so the it was at like 1. Almost 3 billion views was Psy's Gangnam Style. Can you play that for us, Elif, just to refresh our memories? Hit it. Gangnam Style. I think what's lost on all of us is how much that is. What do we got, about 8 or 9 billion people on the planet? The video on this is just delightful. The video on this is so much fun. Okay, you know the words. That's Gangnam Style. Third most viewed video on Earth. Music video on YouTube's kind of the same thing. Number 2, Charlie Puth and Wiz Khalifa with...
Been a long day without you, my friend. And I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. We've come a long way, from where we began. I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. When I see you again.
That's pretty good. That's Charlie Puth and Wiz Khalifa. And of course, it helped that Fast and Furious 7 ran that, I believe, at the end of the movie. There's a music video sort of homage. But Despacito, and Despacito is by whom again? What's the name?
It's by Luis Fonsi featuring Daddy Yankee.
I love that you're not 100% sure of that either, because you miss music.
Yeah.
This is the most viewed music video, i.e. the most viewed video on Earth today, and this is what it sounds like. Despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído. It's entirely in Spanish, and it's no more complicated than this guy and some of his bandmates dancing and singing. There's a gorgeous Latina that's featured in it. She's wearing Daisy Duke. She's got beautiful hair, and you see her in various poses and shots. It's not real raunchy. She's gorgeous. The song's fun, but it's not so spectacular. I mean, are you listening to this going, boy, if we were going to send our DNA into space, I'd say we got to make sure we got some of this. It's a nice song, isn't it? That's the most viewed video here on Earth. Despacito, the new number one.
Can we drop in here on President Trump? We're just getting, this is taped delays, talking about Korea. I'm sorry, we might have just missed it here.
Thank you.
What were you hearing, Steve?
Well, North Korea is talking about never using its nuclear weapons unless at the United States. President just said that they are talking very tough, but if there were to be any action, they will be met with fire and fury. I don't want to offer the exact quote, but it's something to the effect of like they've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully I can turn around a little bit here in just a couple of minutes.
You know, if you're the big dog, you don't need to bark that much. Everybody knows who's the winner in a nuclear war around here. So I'm going to let the president have his words, and I haven't heard them, but I know he does like to talk tough and brag about our weaponry. And I've never felt the need for that. When George Bush was the president, we were fighting wars with foreign agents. I never felt like we needed to brag about what we could bring. Let's just bring it if we need it. We asked you to take the Time Magazine Post test of your immigration status. If you were going to come to the United States, would you qualify? That test is now on my Facebook page. I'm King John there. Deneen said, I can't tell what her score is. Carol said, nope, I'd only get 19 points. I would not be admitted. John, I passed, but barely. I got 31. No other member of my family passed. Since I couldn't bring them with me, what's the point? Donna says, John, I got an 18. My master's doesn't count since it's not in a STEM field. Betty scored 18. If only I would have gotten my master's degree in something other than education. No, Betty, if only you would have gotten an Olympic gold medal. That's what we value here. Michelle just posted a GIF of a grumpy cat with the big word nope on it. So we don't have anybody listening, at least taking the test on my Facebook page, that would be given admittance. Steve's got more news next on WGN. By the way, Andrea, I just wanted to drop in here real quick with an observation about the point system that the administration has. Andrea, what did you want to say?
Hi. It dawned on me when I was listening to you talk about the Olympic medals. Doesn't Russia get a lot of Olympic medals?
It makes it easier for them to get entry than you
exactly.
and me, doesn't it?
Exactly. And the part that bothered me yesterday when I took the test was the salary that was expected to even get any points to enter the country. I mean, $77,900.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who makes that?
Not many people. Most folks don't.
Right.
Yeah, I think we've cracked the code here.
I think that was 0 points. I think you had to make more than that.
Oh, yeah. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I think you've cracked the code. Would help if you were an Olympic medalist. It would do my heart good if the next picture the president tweeted was of him with a ping pong paddle and a bratwurst doing things Americans do while they're on vacation. Can you play the soundbite of him speaking about our potential response to North Korea again, Steve?
Sure. Let me. I gave you a shorter version of it.
This is the president on vacation. He's in New Jersey. He's also working, as all presidents do on vacation. And in response to aggressions by North Korea, the president's got some things to say.
Best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before.
Did somebody write that, or is that him ad-libbing?
He was there to speak about, it was an opioid crisis event,
mm-hmm.
so...
I'm not making that. I don't think that's a silly question.
No,
was
I don't know the answer
was that
to it. I didn't see it. You know, it was done on a tape delay.
Fire and fury. And by the way, as if that weren't enough, also power. So you got that going for you. I cut you off, Steve.
No, I don't know. I didn't see it. It was a pool. It was one of the things where they did it. The pool was in there, then came out and released it to the rest of us.
Okay, who does that sound like when he starts to just go off on these... We're so powerful, you just can't believe it. Tangents, these ad-libs. Who does that sound like?
I don't know who.
Baghdad Bob. That doesn't sound like Baghdad Bob, the spokesperson for Iraq, when during the war we were like marching right through their streets. And here's a quote from Baghdad Bob. There are no American infidels in Baghdad, never. Even as they were waving in the background. Baghdad Bob, my feelings, as usual, we will slaughter them all. Baghdad Bob, our initial assessment is that they will all die. God will roast their stomachs in hell. He said things like that to sort of put up a tough image, even as the statues were toppling around them. That was Baghdad Bob, the minister of Iraq during the war. Mohammed Saeed al-Sahaf was his real name. But he would just say these outlandish, super powerful things, and the more extraordinary they were, the more powerless they sounded.
Right. Okay. But there was the difference was that he didn't have at his disposal.
You knew they were idle threats.
Right.
Whereas when we say fire and fury, the likes of which the world has never seen. And by the way, the world has seen the likes of extraordinary fire and fury. And I would hope that it doesn't come to that. I guess it's nice to know we have that option. I don't know what's the matter with me. I'm not comfortable with my president threatening that, throwing that out there as a...
It was an extraordinarily strong threat. The past administrations would say that we'll take nothing off the table, you're laughing more than me.
Well, your point about that?
I don't know. This was pretty strong words, and
well, isn't that what I'm trying to say?
I know, but I think you're seeing Baghdad Bob, and I'm seeing, that this is as close to an escalation as we've seen during this administration.
It's him just blowing off steam. He doesn't appreciate the consequences of those actions.
Okay, you're right.
I've been right about everything since I said he wasn't going to win the nomination.
No, but about that, you're absolutely right. The words don't matter nearly as much to him as they.
I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And the danger with this president has always been, okay, so we're kind of figuring that out here. Hey, China. Hey, North Korea. Hey, Russia. We hope you understand that too. So when he's essentially threatening nuclear annihilation if they step out of line. Don't worry, we're not going to nuclear annihilate you. Nobody wins on that. But that's just my reading the tea leaves. I don't know. Did George Bush say those kinds of things? Like when George Bush was standing on the rubble of the World Trade Towers.
There was shock and awe.
Shock and
that
awe
came
was
from that. But I don't remember but
that
exactly.
That was before 9/11. Shock and awe was not 9/11.
No, shock and awe, I think, had to do with the 2003 war.
Yeah. Well, that'd be after 9/11.
I think that was that what they called the operation, Operation Shock and Awe? I don't remember exactly where that came from.
Well, the Persian Gulf War, remember that one that his dad executed?
Yes.
What was that campaign called? I thought
Desert
that was
Storm.
Shock and Awe.
No.
Oh, that was right. That was Desert Storm, and then we had Desert Fury. God, these are like hurricanes. I'm forgetting the names of my military conflicts and operations. So Shock and Awe was what we were going to do after 9/11.
I don't remember, John. You know, that might have been one of the phrases. I don't know if that came out of the president's mouth or an aide, or if that was what they... The operation Shock and Awe, I think that was it.
No.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, these are very explosive words.
Yeah, pardon me for being more amused than you are about this. I think if you don't laugh, then you cry. I mean, if you just try and keep it in perspective, and I think him throwing those words around sounds almost comical. I mean, can you just play it one more time? Because listen to him. There's this sort of braggadociousness to it that's not necessary. If you have the ultimate weapon and everybody knows it, you don't need to brag about it, and you don't need to say it twice, and you don't need to describe it that way.
All right, here's part of what he said.
Best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement.
If that shuts him down, like if, you know, they go, wow, this guy's kind of a crank and he's anxious to pull the trigger on something, if that gets them to behave, then I guess that works. And then we win.
Oh, I think this would play right into his hands.
Whose hands? Kim Jong-un?
Yeah, he's got the attention now of the minder.
Well, sure, right? Look, one of two things are going to happen. They're either going to de-escalate their weapons program or they're going to continue to go the direction they're going. If Trump can bully him into cooperating, then that's a good thing. That's what Donald Trump is doing. He's not going to launch nuclear weapons, but he's hoping that talking like this will get them to be a little more passive. So if that works, I'm saying, okay, then we win in that case.
Yeah, what I'm saying is you've got the third grader who's trying to get the attention and taunting the teacher, and the teacher just responded in the third grader's language.
Yeah, he did lower himself to that level, didn't he? It's 2:45 on WGN. One other story that kind of caught my eye today as we get near 3 o'clock. Ro's going to come in here. If you think I'm a little animated about this, wait till Ro Khan comes in here with Anna DeVlantis. Did you see the story in the Chicago Tribune about Alicia and Richard Stevenson? He is the guy that founded the Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
I'm thinking of divorcing him.
Oh, my gosh. Evidently, you can make a lot of money if you attack cancer. And this guy's been a very successful businessman. So he got a divorce from his wife. He's since remarried. But this divorce proceeding has been carrying on for years. And while the divorce has been final, then you also have to split up the assets. So what are you going to get? What are you going to get? And the phrase that you'll hear is a lifestyle to which you have been accustomed, right? So if you and I are making $40,000 a year and then we get a divorce, then I'm entitled to a $40,000 lifestyle. Even though now I don't have $40,000, you need to accommodate me to that degree. And if I'm super duper rich, then you need to accommodate me to that degree. So then do you have the assets to do that? And what was that lifestyle per se? And so then you get down to nuts and bolts. You've got to get out your number two pencil and say, okay, how much were we spending a month on groceries and travel and gifts? The Chicago Tribune says that Alicia Stevenson left her 30,000 square foot home she shared with her millionaire husband on a 180 acre Northwest suburban estate. They soon could decide whether she is entitled to monthly living expenses of $400,000. $400,000. So if you do 400,000 times 12, that would be 0-0. I know I could have done this earlier. Just bear with me. I'm almost done. Well, it'd be $4.8 million a year. She'd need $4.8 million a year. And maybe that's, if you're super-duper rich, the amount of money to which you had been accustomed. She wants to reclaim a Porsche that she got as a wedding present and other luxury items. My goodness. If you all have that much money and you gave her a Porsche, give her the Porsche. You can, they'll make more. She currently gets $65,800 in temporary maintenance, but she said, fine, but I need $400,000 if we're going to be fair about that. And in fact, she says in the court documents that she's 52 now, she's in deep credit card debt, and she can't find a job. She said that although she was his partner in business, helped him, now 77, make a lot of the money that they made, she lacks the formal education or degree to land a job anyway. She's got an associate's degree in fashion. She married him when she was 19 and he was in his 40s. So he got a divorce. He's in his 40s. She's 19. They got married. The man of her dreams. It was a three-day romantic fairy tale wedding at their Tudor Oaks estate in Barrington. And you know what really ticked her off was that then he gets, so that they get divorced, he gets married again. The new wedding ceremony cost $4 million. The union ceremony, they called it in 2014. And she's like, okay, wait a minute. I'm just cranking along here at $69,000 a month, and your union ceremony to that lady costs $4 million? Don't tell me you don't have my $4.8 million a year. You just blew $4 million on a three-day weekend. Come on. That's the way these things go. Witnesses at the, it says in court, she and witnesses spoke of Stevenson's hosting lavish parties with celebrity entertainers. They traveled on their multiple jets. They cruised on yachts. They drove fine cars and motorcycles. They enjoyed multiple finely appointed homes around the country and in the Virgin Islands with a full staff at each location. That's what you want. You know, it's sort of like a cabin. Say you got a real nice house in Denver or someplace like that. But then when you get there, you got to kind of flush the toilet and get things going. Wouldn't it be nice to walk in and there's a staff and they greet you with a poo-poo platter? Then you know you've got money. But they signed a prenuptial agreement. And in the prenuptial agreement, according to court documents, she was expected to pursue higher education and a career after they got married. Remember, she's 19 when they got married. He's in his 40s. Richard wanted his young wife to grow and learn so that she could one day become self-sufficient. He said, since you didn't do that, well, I'm not so sure about the rest of this stuff. That's my language, not the official court language. I don't know who you're rooting for on cases like this. It just seemed to me like when I get to be king, say you all have hundreds of millions of dollars and you want $4.8 million but a year and he only wants to give you like $1 million a year, I would make that decision like that. And I wouldn't even worry about how fair it is because after a certain point, it's enough. It's enough. So if you say it should be 4 point and he says it should be 9 and I think it should be 2, it really doesn't matter. $1 million a year to spend is enough money. Maybe it's not super fair, but it's hard to feel sorry for anybody in a story like this, isn't it? Don, what did you want to say? You're on WGN. How can I help you?
Yeah, what I was saying was basically there's this couple fighting over all the spoils of all the literally billions and millions of dollars that they're making off the backs of people that are desperately ill. And our insurance, we're looking at a time when, you know, we're looking at our insurance industry and healthcare and getting rid of it. And, you know, there's no cost controls. And these people are making themselves, you know, gazillionaires off of the backs of people that are ill and sick. And we all look at, as a society, a healthcare system that's broken because of reasons like this.
What an interesting observation. I didn't even think about it in those terms. But yeah, he's the guy that founded Cancer Treatment Centers of America. I'm sure those are great places, but evidently there was a lot of money being thrown off to him, wasn't there?
Great, great.
Interesting
for sure.
Point. Don, thanks for the call.
Sure.
Have a good day. By the way, speaking of staying healthy, so this one guy, I said Western Springs, but that's the Walgreens store that was charging the wrong price. I think he was from Schaumburg, maybe. What was the suburb? Naperville? Anyway, this guy is filing a lawsuit against Walgreens because at one of their stores, they charged the wrong price on the sweet beverage tax in Cook County. So he's trying to initiate this class action suit against Walgreens. I don't think Walgreens is the bad guy on this. Anyway, we sent David, who's been shadowing us across the street, to the nearby Walgreens here on Michigan Avenue to see what the same product, in this case the Dasani Sparkling Black Cherry Naturally Flavored Sparkling Water Beverage, would cost. And there, they did not charge the sweet beverage tax, which is correct. Even though the Dasani Sparkling Black Cherry Naturally Flavored Sparkling Water is sweet, it doesn't have any artificial sweeteners in there, and therefore doesn't qualify for the tax. And at our Walgreens, they got it right. We paid on 8 cans a tax of 9 cents, not like it would have been 84 cents. So they got it right here anyway. It's 2:57 on GN. Rokan, Anna DeBlantis in the studio. Hi, kids. How are you?
Well, couldn't be better, John.
Hi, John.
Oh, that's good,
bro.
You're off to a good start.
Isn't
happy.
Isn't that good?
Yeah. Let's just end it right there. Quick, Anna, wrap up the show.
Oh, it's beautiful weather, isn't it, Ro? Yeah.
Well,
actually, it is.
It's that soft kind of weather today. It's like that. You know, you walk outside. It's I like to refer to this as naked weather, where if you were naked, you'd be totally comfortable.
And a lot of people took advantage of that. And Lollapalooza, we saw, right?
Oh, I received a friend of mine sent me pictures
of Malia or Sasha.
No, from the weekend, just random shots
of people at Lolla.
Of people from Lolla, and I would like to just point out that you know this whole it's a pilgrimage that I have been on that by articulating how slutty the people are who
I know you
go
been
to Lolla.
Upset about this.
There is a picture of a woman who's complete keister. I mean, the only thing covered in this is not just, it's a thong, but the thong appears to just basically be a pasty over the part that it has to cover. I mean, it is an unbelievable, what is wrong with these people?
Minute and 6 seconds and he's back on track.
There you go. We got him.
That's a new record.
I don't know.
That's how you dress for a Lollapalooza. That's just it. That's just the game. The way it works.
Right. Now, I don't want to bring anybody down, but probably by 5 o'clock we'll be engaged in thermonuclear war.
Can we just enjoy the thongs with the pasties for now?
So I think that's maybe what we're going to have to do.
Do you hear Trump's verbiage on that thing?
Oh, my gosh. What strong words. It shook me a little bit, I'll tell you.
I don't like my president because, like, if you have a nuclear weapon, you don't need to talk about your nuclear weapon. It's the ultimate Trump card, no pun intended. You've got a nuclear weapon!
Yeah.
North Korea met with fire and fury like the world has never seen.
I still want to know if that was written for him or if that was
reading.
An ad lib.
He was reading. I was watching it on the
And then he came back and goes, and powerful. Like,
powerful.
No, well, in that case,
I thought that was something else.
In that case, we'll rescind our nuclear program.
I don't think we should meet the madman of North Korea rhetoric to rhetoric here. I don't think we need to. I think you're right. The United States of America stands in a very different place than does North Korea.
I was channeling or tracking Baghdad Bob while he was talking, and Bertrand wasn't amused or on board my analogy. But that guy was just throwing crap out there because he thought it would help.
But it led to a war, and it led to a war that Donald Trump, you know, decried as, you know, a total mistake getting into Iraq. And there's a lot of Americans who would agree with him on that. And this is a different engagement. We would not be invading North Korea by ground. That would not be happening. There would not be a ground war there. And that's a very different situation. Because even though Saddam Hussein had one of the, I think at that point, the fifth largest military or something, it was nothing by comparison. This is very something by comparison. There's a million armed, highly trained people in North Korea, and it's a small, hilly place. We've been there before. It's a very tough terrain in which to prosecute a ground war. And listen, they beat us back in the 1950s, right?
Oh, I just think this is a push button war. This is us firing stuff on them and them firing stuff on
us. I mean, this is not an easy thing to win. So the question is this. I mean, it's one or the other. And this is not the kind of thing that rhetorically you want to be in, because it's not going to – listen, do you think that Donald Trump, by getting up there and talking about this today, intimidates Kim Jong-un?
I don't want to test how crazy he is either.
Well, like I said, the weather was nice. You guys have a really good show.
What'd
I'll be
you
listening.
Do, John?
Yeah.
It's not me. I'm sitting here trying to enjoy myself in naked weather.
You didn't show up naked today, though, so that was probably a good
choice. Well, not here. I decided to get dressed here, but everywhere I ran my errands totally naked today. you're going to read
naked
about
errands.
It on dnainfo.com.
Perfect.
All right, thank you.